Hello.
Always feel like somebody's
Somebody's
watching
watching
me.
me. Who sings that?
You had to ask.
It's not Michael Jackson, right?
No. Let me look it up. I just started singing it the other day and
What? That's weird because I was singing that too. I was just singing it at work. It's weird. You would know nothing about it.
that's what you think.
No, because I was on a virtual computer and somebody could log into the virtual and I could see that somebody else is logged in. So I started singing that song.
How do you know that wasn't me?
Because you can't log into the virtual.
Actually, you're kind of right because it was by a guy named Rockwell.
Oh, Rockwell, yeah, that's right.
And Michael Jackson
Wrote
and
it?
Jermaine Jackson were on the song. Michael Jackson
Oh,
does
so
vocals in the chorus.
I knew that the chorus sounded like Michael Jackson, so
Yeah, he
that
does
makes a lot of sense.
some backing vocals on there, so
Damn.
you
Some retro knowledge right there.
there you go, yeah, that
Is your recorder working?
I'm trying out a different one than the one that messed up for Rob and I.
Did you try to record? Did you do Pretty May originally?
I used to
Not
do Pretty
Pretty
May, yeah.
May, you Pamela. Did you do Pamela?
Well, originally back in the day when I was doing backups for the just for this show, I was using Pretty May, and then
Then you
I
decided to upgrade instead of saying no.
right, I didn't know it would cause a problem.
Oh.
And then, when I tried doing Pamela for Rob and I, and that's when I started having the problems.
Yeah, it
So,
happened to Daryl too. He asked for my
yeah.
recording. But did you set the options so it'd be on one track instead of on many?
You mean like mono or
Yeah,
stereo?
yeah, yeah.
I think I had it set to mono. I don't know, but I'm trying out,
Because I know
Different.
Daryl's was on two different tracks.
Oh.
And maybe the upgrade caused an upgrade to Pamela, which maybe didn't set his defaults. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying out the program that they use on a lot of the Nerdy Legion shows.
What is it?
MP3 Skype recorder.
Oh, okay.
It's a free program. That's the funny thing is that
Who makes that?
I don't know. I can't remember. I downloaded it real quick, and that's what we actually recorded the first Booster Club with, because but I couldn't even get Pamela to record before that show. And then the second show, we recorded with Pamela, and it worked out okay, except for, yeah, and I think then the third show, I had to cut some of the content from it, but I could use enough of it. And then the last one we tried to record was just totally screwed up. So, but yeah, I got it from some site, voiceover, VoIP call recording.com. I don't know who makes it though. Contacts. Someone named Alexander. This looks like a Russian dude.
So somebody in Russia that's collecting your Skype data.
Yeah, probably. Alexander
Skype
Luther.
record,
Uh-oh.
yeah. Skype recorders are such a pain in the ass
Yeah.
because they don't care about them. Microsoft doesn't care. Do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah, they're not supporting them.
But they should just make their own then. I mean, it's
I don't
supposed
know.
to be voice over IP. You want to record conversations.
Yeah, obviously
Yeah.
that's a big part of their user base,
Yeah.
whether they like it or not, you know.
But even if you have it like for a business, you still want to record like the messages that you can't get to. Do you know what I mean? I'll have it auto answer and then go to some kind of recorder.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I don't encounter Skype much in business. It seems like because of that reason, a lot of they go with other programs. Trying to, off the top of my head, I can't think of them, but yeah, there's a few like meeting applications. But that's the world that we live in, listeners.
Yes. And sometimes they'll just phase us out. They'll say podcast no more, just like mutants no more.
Well, it's all about, like, from Bill's Kids, it's all about the YouTubes anyway.
Yeah. It's the
They
YouTubes.
want to look at people when.
They want to see me in my underwear recording
Yep. I don't know why, but
topless.
kids these days,
Yeah.
But I guess this is episode 77 of the Retrocast.
Yeah, whoever's keeping count.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website. The last thing released on there was a Retrocast.
Yeah.
Did
So,
you and Bill recorded though? You got another regular Geek Brunch coming up, right?
no, he canceled because I was going to alternate him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Me and Bill are having really bad luck. So, it almost works out. If I'm available for a weekend, he's not available for a weekend. And it just
Yeah.
alternates like that all the time.
Yeah, that happens.
So it was his birthday weekend, and he's going to an amusement park.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's going to a Six Flags. He said he was sick though too. He said he is coughing a lot. So he's going to be on the roller coaster, spewing his germs as he's falling all over everybody.
That's gross.
Because his hands will be up in the air as he's falling. He's not going to be covering his mouth.
No, it'll be just,
Coughing.
there'll just be a, he'll
And
probably sit in the front.
he'll be sitting in the front, and the person in the back is going to get all of his coughing germs in their mouth.
Yeah, because they'll be screaming and it'll just be
Yeah.
like a spew, there'll be a spewage of disease.
Yeah, and I think he hawks loogies off of the roller coaster anyway.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so. You know, Bill.
Looks like they have a, I'm looking at Six Flags website right now. Looks like they have a Joker ride coming up. It's going to be new next year. The Joker, it's a purple and green roller coaster. Free fly roller coaster. They must, so D, so our Time Warner must have some kind of association with Six Flags or something.
Yeah, they own it.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Time Warner also bought something recently.
I
No,
said whoa, because all of a sudden.
AT&T bought Time Warner.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they must, because the Flash Pass.
Yeah, they have that's where they have the Superman roller coasters and the Batman
Yeah.
stage shows and
Justice League Battle for Metropolis.
yeah.
4D interactive thrill ride. You get to shoot at villains and stuff, it looks like.
Where's that at? Are you looking at the Chicago one or where are you at?
That's what I Googled. Yeah, I don't know if it. Yeah, Six Flags, Great America, Chicago, Illinois. Because I want to see what Bill's
Because
doing.
there's other ones though too. Like
Yeah,
El
yeah.
El Elitch Gardens used to be Six Flags. I don't think it is anymore. But when they were, they would theme it. They'd have like, how you have Mickey and all that crap rocking around while you have like superheroes walking around, except it was DC themed. So it
Yeah.
was kind of cool. But like Universal is Marvel themed still. And those rides are awesome. I wonder if that Justice League 4D is similar to the Spider-Man 4D, because the Spider-Man 4D is awesome. Like you go on that ride, and it's like totally simulated with like animation and stuff. and you wear like 3D glasses. So when you like ride it and Spider-Man lands on your cart, you actually feel it, and then it simulates the thud. And when you're dropping, they simulate you falling and the web catching you, so it's got that buoyancy, like you're bouncing on it. It's really cool. And like Doc Ock will come out and he's got like fire coming out of his tentacles, and you feel the heat on your face, you know, it's like poof. And the one that's really cool is Hydro Man, because Hydro Man comes out at you with his hand and you just get soaking wet, you know. It's pretty cool. I like those 4D simulators. In Disney, they have one called A Bug's Life, or it's in one of those animal parks. And they simulate a stink bug, and it smells like shit. It's awful. It's awful. The bug actually farts, and it smells gassy. It's awful.
Nasty. Yeah, Six Flags owned the amusement park near here for a while, like from like late 90s to they owned it for like a decade. So they did open a bunch of new rides and stuff like that, and they had the Superman roller coaster, which is still there, but it's called the Ride of Steel now. They had to drop
Yeah.
the Superman name off of it once when they
Sure,
sold it.
sure. That's what happened
But
to Eelich's.
yeah.
I wonder if that happened around a similar time. You know, it's been a while since ours was Six Flags. Maybe they just took like the parks that they could sell and sold them, and then kept the ones that they were more profitable. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Probably something like that. Yeah, it's interesting when you see that. We watched it's not a retro movie, but we watched this horror movie called Lights Out last night, and I thought this must be associated with Time Warner because the one like the main female character in it, like in her apartment, she had a couple of those big, like hardcover Sandman volumes on the
Oh,
shelf.
yeah.
I noticed, and like her little brother was wearing a Batman shirt at one point, and then they showed like part of his room. He had a Robin action figure, and they had like two different Justice League posters on as well.
What was the movie about?
Well, without spoiling it, it's about this family that is bothered by this like creepy woman that only appears in the dark. If you turn the
Oh.
lights on, she disappears.
So it's a horror genre.
Yeah, it was okay.
Is it
It
on
was
Netflix
no, we got it from the library.
or? Okay.
It just came out this year, earlier this year.
I think I saw the preview for it.
Yeah, it was okay. It was average. It wasn't great. But
Most horror movies aren't, but as long as they entertain. I
no,
mean,
I mean,
most of them don't have that like surprise shocking ending.
no,
And
I've
most of
seen.
them aren't scary anymore. I mean, there every now and then you'll run into something that make you jump.
Right. Yeah, and I was, and judging it from the point of view of having seen a lot of horror movies, and I'm not even judging whether I find it scary or not. Like, I just don't, it was average in terms of how it was made. Like, the script was okay. There was some
Yeah.
cool moments, but it wasn't the greatest. And the child actor wasn't, as far as child actors go, wasn't the best. But yeah, it looks like you were right. Six Flags owned Eelich's from around the same time, like slightly after they bought the one near here,
Yeah.
and till about like around the same time, 99 to 2006.
I always wanted it to become like a DC theme park, because I
Sure,
just love
yeah.
the DC thing. And if I could get like a DC theme park that was even close to the one at Universal that has the Marvel, I'd be like really. I wonder what's going to happen now that Disney and Marvel are like really ingrained. Like they're going to come out with more Star Wars rides, and now they own Star Wars and more Marvel themed stuff. What
Probably, yeah.
that'll do with to Universal. Because
Yeah,
like the
no.
Spider-Man, right, they could change the Hulk roller coaster. You could change a roller coaster into something else. You could call it like the Green Machine or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But the one that's like Spider-Man, you can't take away from that. Like they have like the Mummy theme ride that I'm really into the 4D theme ride. Like Bill really loved the Mummy ride too, based on the movie. And then the Transformer one is really cool. It's based on the movie Transformers, and it's really cool. The thing I like about them is it simulates roller coaster. It simulates like you're in the story. Like you're part of the comic book, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little more multimedia, sounds like.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Disney,
See,
man, they're so huge.
animatronics. Yeah, Disney's huge. They own so much now.
My niece and nephew are both obsessed with Disney Channel stuff.
I
They
can't
both
imagine
watch.
being a kid today, though, like with all the recorders and stuff, and I think it'd be harder to go outside and play back. I'm glad I didn't grow up in this time. That I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I more even more so for the social media aspect of it. Like
Yeah,
my
I'm glad we didn't have to deal with that.
yeah, I mean I with the technology we already had when I was middle school, high school, like I dealt the bullying I dealt with was bad enough, and like I just can't even imagine having to deal with that like in
Yeah,
a
because
social media setting.
you can get away from bullying. You have to deal with it. You know, it's 8 hours a day or less than that. You know what I mean? And then you were free.
Right.
Or they would go to your house and do it, but that didn't usually happen. Bullies usually picked on you at school.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I could see how, in some ways, like when I got a car for the first time, and that allowed me and my friends to go out to other communities in the area and meet kids from different high schools and stuff that had stuff in common with us. Like that was a really good thing for me. So I could see even the same way it is today as an adult, like I could see how there might have been some positives to social media where like how you and I
Yeah,
became
maybe
friends.
you're not as alone as you think you are, kind of
Yeah,
thing.
so it might have helped from that aspect, and so I guess I could see there might be a positive side to it too,
But
just like
most of the bullying on the social media, you could filter out if you know what you're doing.
yeah,
Like
that's
on
true too.
Facebook, you could say, "Well, I don't want to be your friend." Like, why would you ever friend somebody that's your enemy?
Yeah,
Why do you
knowing how I
put yourself
was
out? Like on
there.
Twitter, you could even set your private settings. You could put a lock thing so you can't
Right.
tweet somebody if you don't want. You can block. You could do a lot of things.
Yeah, and that's
I mean,
probably what I
I
would have
just
done.
don't get why people tolerate it.
No. I mean, my Twitter's not private, but a lot of the times I look at my Twitter list that I set up, and it's only when I'm in the right mood that I'll look at my main Twitter feed. But a lot of times I'll just go in there and look at the list that I set up of the people that I want to see their
Well,
tweets.
that's exactly mine. I think I have like 50. I like follow 1,200 people, let's just say. And of those 1,200, there may be 50 people that I'm really interested in what they're saying.
Yeah,
Like
I think it was you that got the idea from.
I'll go to the list and just say, okay, I want to see these guys. And it's like you, Campbell. You know, it's all the people that I want to see what they're saying.
Yeah. It's a lot of people I'm friends with because my Facebook is more curated. You know, I don't have a ton of friends on there. So a lot of the same people that I'm looking at their Twitter stuff is just to see if, you know, they posted something there that they didn't post on Facebook or something. But so yeah, that's true. I probably would take the same approach if I was if that stuff was around when I was a teenager. But thankfully, I'm not, and that part is of my life is over.
So we're skipping this week on the Battlestar Galactica. We'll keep watching that, but we decided to do this like on a Saturday, so we don't have much time to watch it.
Yeah, that is
And
correct.
I did watch a retro movie that I hadn't seen before. I'll talk r really quick about. They were playing on Turner Classic Movies. I really wish I only caught on to this when I was on vacation. But every Friday, Turner Classic Movies, not, yeah, it was Turner Classic Movies. I always get AMC because American Movie Classics used to be American Movie Classics. Now it's more like Walking Dead Channel. Or it's a different entity now. Whereas Turner Classic Movies still plays classic movies. And every Friday they were playing Universal Horror Monsters, like things that were there. And I've seen Frankenstein a gazillion times. I rewatched Dracula, and this is probably like the fifth time I watched Dracula, maybe sixth time. I think it's an amazing film. Like it is truly amazing, and you can see the correlations between the outbreak and the strain in Dracula, which I really love. Like it came on a ship going to Colfax Abbey. And Dracula killed everyone on board, and the only one that was alive was Renfield. Well, in The Strain, it was very similar, except it was a plane. Everybody on board was killed, except for a handful of people that brought the virus with them or became
Oh, right.
vampires. Yeah. So I really liked just the correlation between that. Bela Lugosi to this day. I don't know what it was, but he was the creepiest Dracula for me. Like he, just his eyes are terrifying because they'd zoom in on the whites of his eyes and they would like put light around it so they would glow every time. The castle design was creepy. I mean, I thought I was really cool. So I saw Dracula again, but the one thing I never watched, I think I watched the sequel, not the primary one, was The Mummy. And it was absolutely fascinating. And I love the history of these Universal horror movies because they made them a lot of money. I mean, you had the Wolfman, the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I mean, they had like a whole genre that just lit up Hollywood. And Bela Lugosi turned down Frankenstein and turned down The Mummy and kind of got blacklisted, if you will, by Universal. And he died a poor guy. Like he was in Ed Wood films and other stuff like that, but never. And the thing that's amazing is because of that, he never made many Dracula films, if you don't count his Ed Wood stuff. He made Dracula, which was in the 40s, and then he made Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which Dracula is in it. That is an if you have not seen the Universal Studios Abbott Costello Meet Dracula, you will love it. It's a Universal monster movie in its glory with a comedic twist because it's got Abbott Costello, but it has the Wolfman, it has Dracula, it has Frankenstein. I mean, it's brilliant. It's my favorite Universal monster movie. And I'm also an Abbott Costello fan, but they were showing that, but I didn't get to see it. But the uh-oh, you got neighbors coming.
I think or Kara might be home actually. She went out this morning.
So the Mummy is interesting because the only time they ever show the Mummy in wraps is like the first 20 minutes of the movie, and for like 5 minutes. And what happens is it like then cuts to the future, like maybe 10, 15 years later, and Boris Karloff is like an Egyptian guy that's still alive, but he was the mummy. But he talks and everything. You know,
Oh yeah, that's
it's
right.
not this guy dragging in rags the whole time. And I thought it was like really fascinating. And I was also fascinated by how little meant. I always thought that he like just mass murdered a bunch of people, and he really didn't. He drove one guy mad, and then he killed like one or I think it was one or two people in the whole movie.
Yeah.
So it I was also fascinated by that. The other thing that was absolutely fascinating is the guy that plays Van Helsing in Dracula is also like a similar character in The Mummy and also played in Frankenstein. So they use the same actor to do like the same sort of roles. Like he's the doctor that could fight the adversary, you know? So I really dug that. So I got a little bit of Halloween Universal Studios monster stuff in, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. You're bringing back my memory of them because I did, I think maybe might have been a decade now at this point that I had watched Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy. I think those are the only ones I got around to reading. I would like to see Abbott, the Abbott and Costello ones, but yeah, they're good stuff. I mean, they stand up. I agree with you about Bela Lugosi and Dracula. He's got a real presence, I would call it.
Yeah.
He still kind of has just this sort of, they're not like the movies aren't scary in the way that you would think nowadays. Although I have read of how frightened audiences were by them at the time.
Oh my God, I can't imagine. The thing that was I still find frightening is the guy who played Renfield. Like he was driven mad by Dracula. Like he originally went with the papers to get him to sign for Colfax Abbey. And to this day, I think Bela Lugosi is the creepiest Dracula. I think that Renfield is the creepiest Renfield. Because in modern storytelling of Dracula, they seem to romanticize it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 40s Dracula, it was pure horror.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing romantic about it. It
Yeah.
was about control. He would control people. I
Right.
love there. There's one scene in there where Bela go. It is awesome scene. I love this movie. He Bela Lugosi, or Dracula actually tries to control Van Helsing. And he
Oh,
can't
yeah.
do it. He like uses his eyes to control him, and he can't do it. And he's like, "Oh shit, this guy's stronger than I thought." You know, I was
Yeah.
it was a brilliant scene. It was so good.
Yeah, that's why I tend to prefer the vampire stuff that leans towards the horror. And there's something about that classic sort of idea of a of someone like a vampire like Dracula coming over, crossing the waters and coming over, and
Yeah.
there being a small amount of vampires, and being a real old vampire, and that sort of dichotomy, the opposition between Dracula and an old vampire hunter,
Yeah.
which it's kind of cool that like I'm not up to date on the strain, but that's one thing that's cool about the strain is that it does, while it makes some changes and updates to vampirism itself and how it looks and how it spreads and stuff like that.
The
And
formula's there. The formula's there.
but yeah, but it so it's different in that respect and sort of modernizes it and connects into modern fears about disease and stuff like that. But it's also very classic in the way that it has that opposition between old vampires and a and vampire hunters.
Yeah.
But I love that actor that plays the older vampire hunter in that.
Oh, Van Helsing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty freaking amazing.
Because he's in a lot of he's in he was well he was in Game of Thrones and he was in Harry Potter. First thing I thought him saw him in was in Harry Potter movies.
Well, he's in the Mummy.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff. He's a British actor. There was I know you're not a Doctor Who fan, but there was a Doctor Who you might if there was anything that you would like, you might like this because it wasn't it was about the show itself.
Yeah.
And when they originally made it, so it's a period film from the 60s. And it was more about the about making the show at the time in the 60s, making a new children's science fiction show in the early 60s, and about how the producer of the show was the first female producer for the BBC.
Yeah.
And David Bradley is the actor that we're talking about. That's his name. He played the actor that played the first Doctor Who, and he's really good in it because the actor at the time, William Hartnell, he was known, he was older at that point, and he was kind of in like the twilight of his career. And he was known for more like action films and stuff like that, and it was kind of a strange casting. And they do a good job of like showing like what it meant to him to be popular again and popular with children. And like how his granddaughter like thought of him as Doctor Who, and they didn't like the whole idea now, this was before they came up with the whole idea now where they have the doctor regenerate so they can cast different actors.
Yeah.
That they didn't have that idea to begin with. They had to come up with that like when it was clear that he couldn't continue to do the role, And so it's more of like a period film, an adventure in time and space, it's called. It might be kind of hard to track down, but the BBC did it around the Doctor Who anniversary a few years ago, and it's more of like a it's more of a period 60s film about
Yeah.
the making of a British TV show than it is like science fiction or Doctor Who itself.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a little retro Doctor Who and Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
If I would have known, I would have set my DVR to record everything. Like I would have just
Yeah.
watched it all. I also watched Friday the 13th, the first one.
Oh,
And I
the
remember,
original.
yeah, I remember that scared the shit out of me. I wasn't scared on the slasher part, like when all the people are dying at Camp Crystal Lake. But the last scene where you think everything's calm, and she's floating on the river on the boat, and then Jason jumps out of the water.
Yeah, that's the classic moment.
And the thing that's kind of brilliant about that movie that I really appreciate, it's different than Halloween, because Halloween, it's Michael Myers killing people. But in this one, it's not Jason Voorhees, it's his mom. It's kind of like a different twist. And I really like that, because the first one, the mother is killing everybody, and then after that, it's Jason Voorhees come back. And then they made him supernatural.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that original is, I think that is a good horror film. I mean,
Well,
they get more and
both of
more
them, even,
ridiculous.
yeah, even Halloween 1 and 2. I like those two the best, even more than the remakes, like the Rob Zombie remakes.
Yeah.
But I really dug that it happened on the same night. Do you know what I mean? Like Halloween happens, and then Halloween 2 is the output of the same night at a hospital.
Oh yeah, it just continues
Yeah, it just
right
continues
along
right
with the same.
off. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
it's not.
I actually found Halloween 2 more, and I've seen it more than I've seen the first one, more frightening than the first one, because that whole hospital just being vacated and what happens there is just really bizarre.
Yeah, I personally I feel like Halloween is a classic. Halloween 2 is decent, but I don't think it's as good. It kind of starts to get into some of the like silly slasher things like that get worse and worse later on, where it's just
Where
like
you can't do nothing about it. It becomes the Freddy, like
yeah, or like
Freddy Krueger. You can't.
and he'll he'll kill people in bizarre ways, just that don't make any sense for him to do it that way, and it's just for them to like have different bizarre kills for the movie,
Well, in Halloween 2, they are kills that are slasher kills. The only one that strikes me that I remember that's bizarre is he turns up the heat.
The hot tub.
The hot tub scene,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's the big
That
one.
why did he do that? Because then he eventually went in there and then face dunked that woman, right?
And that the hot tub, it has a setting on it in the first place that
Yeah.
is like for like I forget what it says, but it's something like why would you even have that setting
Yeah.
on the hot tub in the first place? It's kind of ridiculous, but you can just, I mean, it's decent, especially compared to some of the later Halloween movies, but you can tell that that Carpenter only produced it, he didn't direct it.
Yeah.
Compared to, because the Halloween, one of the things that's so great about the first one is his direction. It's just some of the shots, like the camera and stuff. It's just really nice to look
Right.
at.
I haven't watched a lot of the Hammer Dracula. You know who's that guy? Christopher, God, what's his name? They did a lot more Draculas with him, and I have not. I like to watch those.
Right. Yeah, I don't. Think
He
I've
was
seen some Hammer before, but
Count Dooku in episode one, episode two. Which
right, and then the and then
can't
the
think of his name.
oh gosh, yeah, we're killing Christopher Lee,
Yeah, I knew it was
no
Christopher
okay,
something, but I just couldn't
I
get to.
know.
But I would like to see if he's in the Bela Lugosi vein or if it's a different one, like if it's more romanticized. Because in the 80s you had that curly haired dude. I forget what that actor was. And that's when they started to romanticize it. And then you had Gary Oldman, and they really romanticized it there.
Oh yeah, well, because it was
And
based off that.
when they romanticize it, they kind of make you feel a little empathy towards the character. Do you know what I mean? Like
Yeah, oh
it's
yeah,
a little bit
definitely.
of a love story, and you feel for him. Even in they just did the Universal just put out that movie Vlad Tepes or whatever it was. God, I can't remember the name of it. Dracula Unbound, I think it was called.
Oh,
And
okay.
it was more of the historical Dracula. You know, the guy that was had the castle and would fight off the Turks and stuff like that.
Right.
That was fascinating, but then they had the horror twist where he actually turned into a vampire instead of the historical basis. Do you know what I mean? It started off with the historical basis and then turned into him selling his soul to the devil, and then he turned to a vampire. But that's worth
Okay.
watching if you're a vampire fan too.
Well, yeah, like the Dracula one that you're talking about, that Coppola did. I mean, that was kind of like around the same time. I think it was kind of influenced a lot by like the Anne Rice,
Oh yeah, Interview with the Vampire.
that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
'cause like her books, while a lot better written and stuff, like than like the Twilight stuff is,
Yeah.
but is definitely very like
That's
romanticized.
how I got my mom into comics for the very first time. Like my mom will read Archie every now and then, but when Interview with the Vampire came on, I bought her the Innovation Vampire Lestat. And this Interview with the Vampire, and what was the Queen of the, I can't remember the other one, but
Queen of the
they
Damned, I think.
yeah, they did adaptations, and she read every single one of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did read some of those books in high school. Yeah, I've only seen the first movie though, I think.
I've seen two
But
of them, and I didn't care for it. I mean, they're good movies and they're well crafted, but the ones I can't actually stand are the I can't even make my way through them is the ones that are really like the glitter vampires. I just can't watch them.
yeah, I haven't
I
even
and
tried.
it's not for lack of trying. I watched the first one at the theater, and then I'm like, well, it's on HBO, so who gives a shit, right? I don't like it, but I couldn't even get through it. I
Yeah.
like I just don't like this stuff.
Knowing the reputation from the books, I didn't even try the movies.
Yeah, I
But
tried it because it's vampires. And
Yeah,
I
I knew
like
it was the kind of
vampire
vampires
movies.
that I didn't like. So, it's just I'm not the target audience, you know. But
Vampire 3000 or 2000, whatever that one is called. That one's a really good one. Near Dark. Oh my God, that's a great film.
I don't think I think that's one I've wanted to see, but I
If
never
you
got
don't,
to.
if you haven't seen Near Dark, and you like vampires, that's a really top notch. And then my favorite is Fright Night, like by a long shot.
Yeah, I have seen that
I
a couple
love that
times.
movie. I even like the sequel because the sequel is The Revenge of the Sister. And then it just goes haywire. You know, then it
Yeah, I
goes
think I
the
saw the
ridiculous.
sequel.
Let's go campy. It had a little bit of camp to it 'cause they had like one vampire on roller skates. That was kind of
Sure. It
goofy.
just had the balance the right way.
Yeah.
Just like Return of the Living Dead. That
Oh,
one.
Return of the Living Dead. I love the remake. To me the Oh no, Dawn of the Dead, sorry.
Yeah, that's the other zombie trend, but
Yeah.
that was one thing that got cut. We talked a lot about Return of the Living Dead on the last Booster Club that we put out, because Rob stopped and talked and met some of the actors at the Buffalo Comic Con,
Yeah.
including Linnea Quigley that played Trash.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot
She
about
was
that.
the red hot punk rock girl, right?
Yeah.
The one that had the naked scenes.
Yeah.
That's one franchise that like I absolutely loved because the effects were strong. It gave like a new it made new zombie rules that I liked, and some of them could talk, you know. Before
Yeah.
that, they wouldn't talk and stuff.
Right, yeah.
They wouldn't necessarily go for the brain. These ones
Yeah,
were like brain targeted.
we talked a lot about that, and that was the last one that was released.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was when you went over the con and you talked about what your top, you ranked your DC books.
Yeah, we just had to we talked a lot more about that, but that was part of that file that was corrupted that I had to
See, I
cut out.
liked that film. I don't think I love it as much as Rob does, but I
Yeah.
love the remake of Dawn of the Dead. I love that because that added like horror to it. They weren't slow anymore. So
Right.
it made it terrifying. Like your whole strategy was thrown out the window.
Yeah, I like both. I mean, people hate on the remake, but I thought the remake was decent. I like the original too.
I like of the original, that's my favorite. Some people say Day of the Dead is their favorite, but that's a slow burn. 'Cause that
Yeah,
has
I'm
that
not really
smart
sure.
zombie
They're
training.
different. I did like Day of the Dead as well.
I even like the ones he redid recently. Like that he continued he did the Hatfield and McCoy ones with I can't remember what it is. He did two movies after Day of the Dead. I own
Right.
one of them, and it was really well done, even though the effects weren't up to par with some of his previous stuff, you know, just because of time, and his
Yeah.
budget was directed to a video. Oh, he had that other one too with God, the guy who played Violator in Spawn. I don't remember his name. But there was that one, and then two other. There was a diary one, and then there was the Hatfield versus McCoy one. I watched them all.
Yeah, it
I
kept
love
making
the
them for a while
yeah, I
there.
love those movies.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I saw some of them. I don't know if I went all the way up to the, but I did see some of them.
You know what I saw just the other day? 'Cause I was sick. I was burning a fever and I couldn't my nose was running like a sieve, so I couldn't work. I knew I couldn't be productive. So I said, I'm staying home. And I turned it on to the Suspense Stars channel, which I was like a good channel to watch. But they had Heels Have Eyes remake, which I had already seen, but I didn't remember how brutal it was. God, it was brutal. I don't know if you've seen that or the original. Those were they weren't Carpenter, they were can't think of his name.
Wes Craven, right?
Wes
The
Craven,
original.
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he did the remake too.
Today, okay. I don't think I didn't see the
They
remake.
did two. The remake is really good. At least I think it is. But it's pretty brutal. That's the only thing I could say about it is.
Yeah.
And the other one that Wes Craven did that I love is The People Under the Stairs. Oh my God, that's a great film.
Oh yeah, I saw that back in the day, and then I rewatched it. Well, it's been a little while now, but yeah, it's a pretty interesting
It's just a horror
film.
film that's just bizarre. Like,
Yeah, it's different.
yeah. I like films that do that. That they'll like take a horror genre in just a bizarre way.
Yeah, I wanted to mention about about Hammer films.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen many of the Christopher Lee Dracula ones, but I have seen a bunch of ones that they did in the 70s that I think you would like, because in the 70s they got like more like they definitely were going for
B film.
B film, but like to get audiences in, like they would always include like nudity in the films, and
Oh yeah.
but they still were like well made. They had Peter Cushing in a lot of them, which I like him a lot. Obviously he's like well known for being Grand Moff Tarkin,
Yeah.
but he was
But
in a lot of
before that,
Hammer
he
films.
was a huge horror icon.
Yeah,
Like
so
Lon
there's like
Chaney Jr. and all those guys were horror icons. The sad thing is, man, what would have happened to Bela Lugosi if he just said yes? Like even in the Ed Wood film, they poke fun of it. I love Ed Wood. God, that's such a good movie. Like I could watch Plan 9 from Outer Space over and over again because it's so ridiculous. It's almost like if me and you were making a film and we never did it before, and we were under a budget constraint, like you knew we had to get it done because you rent the studio and you do this and that, and you have very limited time to edit or make everything perfect, so you just put it together and throw it out there.
Yeah, I've seen Ed Wood, the Tim Burton movie,
Yeah.
but I've never actually sat down and watched an actual Ed Wood movie,
I've
including
seen
Plan 9 from Outer Space. I think
two
I've
of
actually I
them.
think I've seen most of Plan 9 from Outer Space, but that's about it.
Seen Plan 9 from Outer Space and Glenn or Glenda, because he had like this thing for Angora
Right.
sweaters. I
Yeah.
mean, they poke fun of it in the Ed Wood movie.
Just to mention a couple like Hammer horror films from the 70s, there's they did like a trilogy of like female vampire films. The
Yeah.
first Vampire Lovers has Ingrid Pitt. She was in like a really pretty actress. She was in a bunch of those type of films in the 70s. And like she was in that, and then also Countess Dracula. And then there's Twins of Evil, which actually it takes Peter Cushing plays like a this is like a period film, and he plays a witch hunter, and the Twins of Evil in it are played by Collinson twins, who are like they actually made the movie because they saw, like, the director saw them in Playboy in the 70s
Yeah.
and decided to make the film and, like, cast them in it as the twins. So there's that. There's Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, which
Oh
is
my
like
God.
which is like a Dr. Jekyll movie, but it's a guy is Dr. Jekyll, but instead of
He turns into a woman.
he turns into a woman, yeah, a beautiful woman that gets naked a lot. She's and it
These
actually was
sound like the sexploitation films that were popping up in
kind
the
of like a
70s.
little touch of that, but it's more like but they so they yeah they do have a little bit of a sexploitation feel to them, but they're still good. Like the thing about them is like they have the violence and the nudity to draw people in, and you
Yeah.
can enjoy that aspect of them, but they're also not terrible,
They
you
have
know.
a plot, right?
But the woman that plays Sister Hyde is Martine Beswick, and she was a Bond girl in Thunderball. And
Thunderball.
actually, she was in Thunderball and also From Russia with Love. So that's just a few, but yeah, they were 50s, 60s, 70s. Hammer horror was really going big, and yeah, as time went on in the 70s, they added more like violence and nudity just to, make money. But Vampire Circus, Captain Kronos, Vampire.
I think I saw Vampire Circus.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them, so.
There's a whole slew of those that I would rent back in the videotape days.
Yeah.
In high school, we would
Oh,
rent
yeah.
like every B cheesy film that you could possibly think of. Like purposely to watch bad films.
Right.
Like we wouldn't go to the video store to get Star Wars or whatever. We'd go get stupid ass films like
Yeah.
Freaks and Bloodsucking Freaks and all kinds of horror movies that never even were released.
Yeah, that's why I mean, I
Faces,
like the Hammer horror.
Faces of Death, those stupid
Oh man, I hate those.
movies.
I just can't deal with it. Like, if I can deal with it as long as I know it's fake, but yeah,
Think
Peter
it was all
Cushing, like,
fake.
I think he played Van Helsing against Christopher Lee's Dracula on
Yes,
a lot of
he
Dracula
did.
ones. Yeah,
And I
so.
have seen like one or two of them, but I know I didn't see the first one. I seen like, you know how they like titled it like Dracula's Revenge or Dracula Unbound or whatever.
Right.
I saw a couple of those, but I didn't, if there was one titled Dracula Proper, I never saw it. If it
Yeah.
was a riff off of the original plot, you know, the original book, Bram Stoker.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, but I would like to see those though,
I
'cause that
would,
was the
and
part of the
I
thing. They had actually good actors and stuff.
yeah, I like to watch a lot of horror movies in October, but I didn't get a chance.
Yeah, I didn't do that series either.
I've been reading a lot of comics instead. And I didn't even read a lot of horror comics. Usually I'll try to read a lot of horror comics, but I didn't.
Yeah. Well, speaking of comics,
Yeah, speaking of.
I saw one of the ones that you read and realized that I had the issue, so I went ahead and grabbed it and read it too.
Oh, which one?
Shade the Changing Man.
All right. I'm glad you picked that.
So we can talk about that, because
Yeah.
I mean, I already had my ones read and stuff like that, but then I saw that you read that, and I have issue 1, 3, and 4, and I hadn't read any of them yet, so I pulled that out and read it.
I wanted to read this because of the current Shade, you know, the Changeling girl.
Yep,
And
yeah.
I'm really glad that I did, because it talks about the Earth and Meta, and then the time in the place in between. It's almost
Right.
like its own Phantom Zone, it sounds like. Like in between where they'd put prisoners and stuff.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And then he wants to escape back to the Earth Zone, and it sounds like he's innocent and he's framed for murder, and he wants to unframe himself. But it's a Steve Ditko thing. And
Yeah, art and plot, and then
yeah, everything. You could kind of tell a Ditko book when he writes it. It's very stylistic in his form. Like it's a lot of meta stuff. Like he did the Creeper too.
Right, yeah, it has more in common with that kind of like where he's more in, like with the Creeper and like stuff that he's done on his own as opposed to
Yeah.
with like Spider-Man and stuff.
And this is not a spoiler because it's in the previews, but in Doctor Strange you'll see like all the buildings warping and curving and forming stuff. And if you look at the cover of Shade the Changeling Man number one, you see that. And you
Yeah.
actually see it happen because one of the prisoners has like a staff that was causing that buildings to just warp around him. It was very Ditko-esque.
Yeah, he's definitely into like certain philosophies and stuff, and you see that in here, like, and also in the there's a lot about like perception versus reality, and the one of the main things that the M vest does that Rakshay put when he has it on is that it distorts the way he looks based on the psychosis, or the mental attitude of the viewer, affects how they see him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was interested in this too. I mean, I had kind of a meaning to read it because, like you said, I really dug. I've only read issue one so far, but and that was actually one of the issues we talked about on the Booster Club episode that we couldn't release, was Shade the Changing Girl number one, and I really liked that a lot.
I really dug it too.
So, and I
It
haven't
is
really.
my it's my favorite of the new line for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can only say that I liked it more than Doom Patrol number one because those are the only ones I've read so far. But yeah, it made me curious about the history of Shade because I hadn't really, I knew of some details that I just picked up here and there, but I never read anything. And
I think I read one issue when I was younger, like, and I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it's
yeah.
weird. And then I picked up the other series, which is a Vertigo series in the 90s, and I read it, and it was just bizarre. And I wasn't into the bizarre at that time, so I like read maybe the first 10 and said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And now I want to revisit it because now I'm more into weird, I guess. And I really liked issue one of the Young Animal imprint. Like I
Yeah.
got a lot out of it, and I was like, wow, this is kind of a fascinating start. And then I read issue two, and I was like, wow, this has like a lot of links to this issue that I picked. Like I was just I have it, I have all the issues, but I read it in the Steve Ditko Omnibus Volume One.
Oh, okay.
These are like beautiful. They're in the same stylistic things as the Jack Kirby ones. So they have like a Steve Ditko Volume 1, Volume 2, and the Steve Ditko Creeper, and they're it same paper, you know, the same stuff. I just love the way they're packaged, and I was like, man, I was looking, and I have so many. I'm getting like addicted to collected editions. Like I need another hobby, right? But I'm really digging them lately. Like the Epic line, I can't get enough of. Like I just buy the hell out of them. And
Yeah,
the
that's.
DC stuff, I'm like getting a lot of. Like the Golden Age omnibuses and the Silver Age omnibuses, I love them.
Yeah, I mean, I do like collected editions, but that is one area. Well, not with the Golden Age stuff, obviously, but one area we do differ in is that I rarely, very rarely, double dip on anything.
Yeah.
But I did happen to. I read this in a single issue because I just happened to find it in the in the 50-cent bins that I shop in a lot.
Sure.
And the way that they get stuff, there was like, I don't know, there had to have been at least 50 copies of Shade the Changing Man number one.
Yeah.
It just where they got a lot where there was just a ton of them, and then
Yeah.
there wasn't many of the of issue. I like I said, I found issue three and four, but it was only a there wasn't as many of those, but it was only an eight issue series, it looks like.
Yeah, there wasn't. It didn't go. I could see it. Like, it's almost like a Steve Gerber book. It's like, it's way advanced, I think, for its time. Like,
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that name,
it
Steve
is.
Gerber.
Yeah, it's like really Vertigo-ish before Vertigo even existed. Like,
Yeah.
it's surreal. Do you have the comic in front of you?
Yep.
Can you turn to page four?
Sure.
Or the yeah, it's page four in the little. Doesn't that thing look very similar? The building look very similar to the Sanctum Sanctorum, Doctor Strange. Look at the symbol even.
Oh yeah.
Window.
Yeah, it's a so it's a occult research center, and Yeah, there are definitely some similarities there, which is what is kind of interesting about this occult group is they basically tell the truth about phenomenon that happens in the Earth zone when it's like bleed over from the M zone, the
Yeah.
metazone. And what they do is basically by like being an occult organization, they tell the truth about what happened, and then people discredit it because it's coming from them. And when they're actually telling the truth, and that's how they like basically cover things up, which is an interesting, like you could kind of pull that apart. And I think Ditko is saying something with that, but
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, you have the metazone, the Earth zone, and then you have the zero zone in between, which is where you're talking about the
It's like the Phantom Zone in
phantom
between where they
zone
keep
kind
the
of.
prisoners, yeah.
But yeah, it definitely, I mean, this came out in 77, and it definitely jumps right in there. It's very fast moving, like in the first couple pages, it just like takes off. I mean, there's an explosion, like Rackshade had been sentenced to death, and it appears that he was framed. So he ends up, because of this explosion, he ends up being able to escape back to the Earth Zone. So he puts on the M vest to go after the people that he believes framed him. But then the agent that's tasked to track him down is his like ex-fiance who
Yeah,
lives
that's
for.
that was brilliant. Malou is her name.
Yeah.
And she's vengeful, man. Like she really is angry with him.
Well, whatever happened that he was framed for, it
Involved her mother,
seems,
right?
yeah, like her parents were crippled by it, and it's just
Yeah.
like she can forgive him for the other stuff, but she can't forgive him for that. And then there's like kind of a further complication that there's an actual villain that escapes as well that causes problems
Yeah,
that.
Zokag, and he's the one that starts to warp stuff, like in the Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
Like when in the preview, you'll see the buildings and stuff reshape. That's what he's doing. There's like a couple panels in here, and I'm like, holy crap! I just saw the movie, and it looks like it came right out of that.
But it's cool. I definitely dug it. And it's cool to see like how the new series pulls from it, and like I know it pulls from the Vertigo series as well.
Yeah. It's weird.
But
It's such a bizarre power set too. Like, I don't even know like what his strength level is. I know it acts like a shield. We know that, right? And we know that it warps reality around him. So like when he's punching somebody, it might look like a big fist, or like if he's trying to scare somebody, his face might look like two stories high. You know what I mean? It's like a warping ability.
yeah, but then
But
it's in the mind, like we're seeing what the victim or whatever you
yeah,
want to call it,
is
like
actually seeing,
that's what
yeah.
they're seeing, but it's like warping it based on
I
their
like
own
the
mind.
thing that they call it a madness vest too. Like
Right.
it has its own thing that if you wear it long enough, you could like lose your mind kind of aspect to it.
Yeah, they seem to definitely be playing with that in the new
Yeah.
young animal one too.
Yeah, poor Harley girl came back from the boarding place, and she hasn't been able to get over the diarrhea.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to take her to the vet this week.
Yeah. That stinks.
Other than that, she's fine. Like she's same energy level, same hunger level. Like right now, she goes and rips off branches off our aspen trees and chews on them, like she usually does. I don't understand why she got so sick this last time. And then we usually give her that like something like some kind of powder probiotic thing. Helps her usually right away. This time it hasn't cut the mustard. It's bizarre. But yeah, I really dug it. I dug the art. I really dug that Malou is actually in Shade the Changing Girl.
Oh, was she? Okay.
Yeah, she is.
I don't remember
In that whole world, the whole concept of the three things, they're in it too, you know.
Yeah, that's
Zero,
definitely there,
yeah.
yeah.
I this gave me a lot more. I'm glad I read it. I'm glad I picked this one. And it was kind of like I was overwhelmed yesterday. Like I walked into the room where I have all my collected editions. I was like, "Oh my God, I have like 30 epic collections and I have all these omnibus." I'm like, "What am I gonna pick?" And I literally had like 15 things I wanted to read. And then I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna narrow it down. I know I wanted to read a Doctor Strange thing. I know I was digging Shade the Changing Girl, so I was like, okay, this got to make the list." And then I wanted to read some Steve Gerber Defenders, but I picked something else. So,
Well, I actually read something by Steve Gerber.
oh, that's interesting. We're thinking
Yeah,
alike.
if you want, I could talk about that.
Well, Steve Gerber, I personally think he's like a man ahead of his time too.
Yeah.
Like just in the concepts, like the way Kirby
But
wrote the
yeah.
Fourth World, the way Ditko wrote his DC stuff, the way it's just like at a different level
Right.
than a standard comic. Like there's something else there. Like it's world building. It's bigger than life. Gerber was very political with the times, you know. And yeah, I'm really interested to see what your pick is because I am a fan of Steve Gerber. I don't know if you ever saw read Hard Times, but that was great. DC had a line called Focus, where they did their it was
That's not.
another Dead Universe line, and
Oh,
Hard
I do
Time was one
remember
of them.
seeing
Yeah,
those, yeah.
Hard Time, amazing. They did two volumes of it. It was really the only DC that succeeded because it had a sequel. You know, but
So that line
yeah,
only enough for the line to get there.
it was about a kid that had superpowers and went to prison.
Yeah, I think I remember. Because I remember seeing that line and not picking anything up from it, and not realizing that one of them was written by Steve Gerber. And you must have, I remember you talking about it on one of your podcasts somewhere at some point, and I realized I still haven't gotten around to it, but that made me want to check it out. But yeah, it's interesting you talk about him in that way because what I read Nevada Number One.
Okay, this one I have not read.
Which it was a 6-issue series from Vertigo. Let's see when it came out, 1998, and this actually was just one of the ones that I've like some of the other books I've talked about the last couple episodes, or I picked it up in the 50-cent bin just because I just had come across it to try it, and but there's an interesting text page in the back where he talks about. What you were just saying that he's kind of like looks at this as like a second chance because he talks about how he was a part of that group in the 70s where he mentions like Steve Englehart's Captain America, Don McGregor's Black Panther, Doug Munch's Master of Kung Fu, Steve Skeet's Aquaman, and his Howard the Duck. And how they were trying to bring in like some of the energy of rock and roll and like when the Beatles did Sgt. Pepper's and just how like ultimately like comics got a lot of like got really commercial again in
Oh
the
my God,
80s.
that cover looks amazing.
Yeah, it's Phil Winslade is the artist
Yeah,
and
he's good.
did a painted cover, but so he just talks about how like he was excited to see because what they had tried to do kind of ended and things got real commercial again in comic books, but then a lot of like he was encouraged to see a lot of the British writers that came out, and he mentions Alan Moore, Frank Miller, Neil Gaiman, Peter Milligan, Jamie Delano, Grant Morrison, Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon, and others. And he just talks about how he was really excited to see their work and the Vertigo stuff that was coming out. And he saw it as kind of like a continuation of the stuff that they had tried to do. And so I thought that was really cool. Like he talks about Sandman and Preacher and so the genesis of this project was He in Howard the Duck 16, there was a bunch of text pieces, and one of them was called Obligatory Fight Scene, and it was a three-way battle between a Vegas chorus girl, a ostrich, and a killer lampshade. And he's over the years, occasionally he'd get a request to
Okay.
bring back those characters, and Neil Gaiman on the CompuServe Comics forum made a public request for the same thing, and so that convinced him to finally, well, it sort of started to convince him, but then he, it encouraged him to try something again at least, and he ended up talking to Karen Berger about doing something with Vertigo. And originally his first proposal was a dark and gritty version of the Inferior Five.
Yeah.
And it was actually Karen Berger who said, "Don't you get anything original you want to do?" And he said that's the first time an editor had ever asked him that in 25 years of working in comics. And so that's when he told her about Nevada, and she actually was interested. So that was, I thought that was a really interesting background for this book, but yeah, as you would expect, as we kind of been talking about it, definitely is very strange.
Do you have the whole series or no?
No, I just picked up this issue at the time, but I would like to read the rest of it now.
Yeah. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know Steve Gerber did a Vertigo title like this.
Yeah, I didn't know until I grabbed it out of the bin, honestly.
And it's got Steve Laiahola on inks.
Yep.
And I got to meet him on a bus. It was really neat.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really cool first issue. Like we've said, I mean, with the art team, it's got really great art. And it starts out in in Nevada, in Las Vegas, of course, and at this place called the Nile Hotel and Casino, and there's a murder that's taken place, and it's a really bizarre murder. The bottom half of the body, the legs and like the up to the abdomen and stuff, is standing upright,
Yeah.
and it's just like cleanly cut through in the middle. And so like the guy, they do like the chalk outlines of the bodies. There's a guy on the floor, he's just like drawing a little line around the feet. And then the other half of the body is propped up in the bathtub as if he's taking a bath, but he's got no lower half. And so it seems like there's a detective that's investigating. It seems like this is actually like this hotel has had problems with several murders of this strange sort, and the owner of the hotel is trying to keep it under the wraps, and meanwhile something else is going on, because like this guy that he's got working for him comes in, and he's like his like tech guy, and he's like talking language that would sound probably familiar to you, Mike, but the hotel director has no idea what he's talking about. He's like, "I was debugging the revised object model in the master timing module, and I ran across some anomalies." And but basically, like, he shows him, it's like he's got this huge, it's the late 90s, so he's got this like huge stack of printer paper,
Yeah.
and it's all like ones and zeros, but there's this line of like Egyptian hieroglyphics mixed in.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of like, what the heck's going on here? But he basically dismisses the guy and tells him, figure it out. Don't tell me about it. Tell the other people you work with. But then the cover is a showgirl in like Egyptian kind of style costume with an ostrich, and they are sort of the main character. We meet them. She's actually jogging with her ostrich in the morning, and her this guy that she's been seeing like tries to run her off the road, just like jump, and she twists her ankle. She knows the techie guy, the computer programmer sort of dude, and so they're talking later. So she does in a performance, even though her leg is messed up, and it just kind of goes from there. The investigation continues into the guy that or whoever the murderer is at the hotel, and she and the ostrich end up having an encounter, another encounter with this ex of hers that doesn't want to say no. It's kind of funny. She jabs him in the eye with her key, and then she's like, the ostrich's name is Bolero. She tells Bolero, she's like, "Bolero, kill!" And the ostrich actually gets like super pissed and like goes after the dude. And afterwards, she realizes she was bluffing, and she didn't even realize that the ostrich would know what to do if she said that. But they find the remainder of another, or the they find another body at the end of the issue in a different part of the hotel, and there's like this the investigation into the murders is really strange. Like they bring in this homeless dude that was trying to climb the outside of the hotel, and he gives all these really weird answers and stuff. So it's very strange, but it's also narratively, like you can follow from one thing to the next. It's not so out there that you don't know what's going on. So I'm pretty curious just about the rest of the series. It was definitely a great find, and
That's a good history too, that her first appearance is in a competitor book. And
yeah,
if you
basically,
actually
yeah.
want her first appearance in DC, it's actually in Vertigo Winter's Edge number one.
Oh, was it interesting?
Oh, it's a brilliant cover too. It's got her and the ostrich, and it's got the guy from Transmetropolitan and the Invisibles and John Constantine on the cover, and it's by Brian Boland. It's awesome.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, her first DC appearance is in that book.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm
it's.
really interested in this. I really like Steve Gerber. He put a lot of thought into his stories.
Yeah, definitely.
And
Yeah,
I'd like to see what this is about.
yeah, and I mean, I think that first the thing in the Howard the Duck, is just kind of like a genesis of the idea, like and then like for this, he really developed the character out of that, just real. Throw like by basic idea throughout there back
Did
in the
you
day.
say the issue of Howard the Duck or no? The specific issue?
Yeah, I think I did. Let me just look at it again. I think it was 16.
I'll just look it up real quick. Duck.
Yeah,
I definitely have it in the omnibus for sure.
he says, some 20 years ago in Howard the Duck 16, I wrote a story called The Dreaded Deadline Doom. It was a collection of short text pieces accompanied by illustrations from a dozen or so artists. It took that form because it was written on the road between New York, where I had been living, and Las Vegas, where I was relocating. And one of the text pieces involves a Vegas chorus girl, an ostrich, and a killer lampshade. And so he replaces killer lampshade with something else. So,
I don't own many Howard the Ducks. I have like five in my collection. And but I do have the omnibus, so it's definitely in there.
but they made little promo cards for this, and when I picked up the issue out of the bin, like a bunch of them were tucked in it, and it's a little playing card. It has the cover of issue one on the one side, and then it's an ace. An ace of spades, just says like, it has the copyright information. It says Nevada and the creative team. So it's kind of neat that that was in there.
Well, I almost went into the Steve Gerber direction, but I didn't. That's because they haven't done an epic collection of Steve Gerber. They've done. I do have some of his stuff inside of the Marvel. What do they call it? Milestone hardcovers. But I chose a Marvel team up, Spider-Man and Nighthawk, number 101. And it was a good one to choose. It was written by J.M. DeMatteis, and artist was Jerry Bingham. And it had a backup story with Steve Ditko on art,
There you go.
and Mike W. Barr.
We
I've
always have
always,
those weird connections
yeah,
between our books.
it is very weird. Plus, you talked about that song. That's so freaking weird. That one I find even more bizarre because why would we be thinking that song? And I was like,
I said, I mean,
I was singing that out loud just this week because I was on there and I saw somebody else moving the mouse and I'm like, I always feel like somebody's watching me.
we got that link.
Yeah.
Plus, I've really upped my surveillance of you
Yeah,
in recent
surveillance.
months.
So this is a Marvel team up. It is in the Defenders. I don't own a lot of Marvel team up. I would like to. I do own a lot of Marvel team up with Nighthawk and Defenders, but I don't own a lot of just Marvel team up in general. So I may or may not have this issue. But I'm reading it out of the Defenders Epic Collection. This is volume 6. And I think it's the first volume for Defenders, so God, I hope they do more. This is one thing I like about the Epic Collections is it's not all just Defenders, it's stories that are key to the Defenders. So it might have a Marvel team up in there. It may have a Captain America issue, anything that came out at the time during this duration that was important and also important to the creative teams involved. So if it was like J.M. DeMatteis, he would take the J.M. DeMatteis stuff. And this one has his ex, Kyle Richmond, is kind of like the Batman analog in the Defenders. He's very rich. He owns a company. He's like Bruce Wayne, if you will, and except his costume is more technology based. And the part that I don't remember why is I don't remember why his powers are doubled at night. But he even makes fun of it. It's like, what good is it if I could lift like 100 pounds? So what if I could lift 200 pounds? You got heroes like the Hulk and Spider-Man. I'm just double strength. But he's being attacked by his ex-fiance, and she jumps out of him during a press conference and starts beating the hell out of him, like lifting him and throwing him stuff. Peter Parker is in the audience covering the press conference, and her name is Mindy, and she's like, this is the part of Nighthawk I totally forgot, but it did happen in Defenders, is he actually killed Mindy in a drunk driving accident. So he was drinking and driving and killed his fiance.
Yikes.
So, and it has interesting things like ramifications as he was. She beats the crap out of him. Spider-Man goes and webs her head to like sustain, like bring her down, and he accidentally rips her head off and finds out she's a robot. But I'm like, what if she wasn't a
What if
robot?
she wasn't,
I
yeah.
mean, holy crap. So her head like blew up, but it's still talking to him. And it says, you murdered me and I want revenge kind of thing. And at this point, Kyle Richmond, his alias is known, so people know he's Nighthawk. And they know that he's Kyle Richmond and he owns this company. And he's got flight abilities, he's got double the strength of his normal abilities, and then he's got like these laser cannons in his wings that will shoot lasers out of. And him and Spider-Man go on to this to try to find out who's really behind this and actually out to kill him. And they go to his old university at Greyburn University. And it's like they're back in time. It's like there's a bunch of robots in the 70s dressed like robots and shooting lasers at him with guitars and all this stuff. And Spider-Man and him are fighting through him, knocking heads off because they're all robotic. And he finds out that Mindy was never murdered. She's in a wheelchair and she's controlling these animatronics and going after them. So she got in that accident from him driving drunk and try to put him in a contraption so he'll crash into a tree just like she did. So she ties Nighthawk up and starts the car and tries to ram him in the tree. Meanwhile, Spider-Man's bound up, so he can't really save him. But he does end up saving him. And it turns out she'd gone crazy. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. I need to get something to drink. It's the part of the cold that I have. But yeah, she does love him and she went crazy, so he tries to rehab her. And that's how it ends. But it was a really good issue. I forgot all about that drunk driving incident. And I forgot that his father tried to protect him from the drunk driving. He didn't even let her know he was alive. He basically did that thing where she lived and she was in the hospital, and he wrote her a check and said, "Get out of my son's life. And if you cash that check, I don't ever want to see you again." I recently saw that in a movie recently. Or maybe a TV show. But that's Marvel Team Up. Number 101.
Oh, shoot, I was muted. I said some brilliant things too.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
As I was choking, probably.
Well, I read something else from the 50 Cent and that turned out they have an interesting provenance that I didn't realize. Steel Claw. Number one from Quality Comics,
Hey, I love that one.
104.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize, but it turns out that like this,
2001.
it
I mean,
started,
2003.
like I didn't realize it was a British thing, and then I started reading it, and that there's ads for Rogue Trooper and
Yeah,
Judge Dredd and
Judge
Judge
Dredd, yeah.
Anderson and Sam Slade, Robo Hunter, and all that stuff. I was like, oh, this is just like a British thing. And yeah, I mean, sure enough, the Steel Claw is like a British, like a well-known sort of British comics thing. And I
These were the
think,
fir these were the first independents I really bought.
oh yeah,
Quality stuff, yeah.
okay, yeah, I've never really read or had much of this stuff, but I guess a number of those British writers that Steve Gerber was talking about came over in the 80s, started doing American comics. They remembered the Steel Claw, and so Grant Morrison used the Steel Claw in some of the British stuff he did before that, there's a crossover, or there's a connection to DC Comics apparently, because the Steel Claw appeared in a 6-issue miniseries called Albion, that came out in 2005 apparently.
Yeah, that was a wild storm.
Okay, yeah, and Alan Moore is involved in that, like as the plotter, but so I think that this actually is a reprint of stuff from, like it came out, I think, does it say? Yeah, 86. But I think it's actually a, so there's like a one, there's one s scene, well, it's just one like piece of a splash page, where the main character, is showing a shadowy figure that he can control his steel claw and make it move around the room, and that's taking place in what was at the time the present day. But then the rest of the story takes place in the 60s, and I think it's actually an actual reprint of the comic from the
It
60s.
is. It was put
Yeah.
in their weekly comic, The Valiant.
Okay.
So they had, 2000 AD and then The Valiant. So it was
Okay.
in their magazine type weekly comic.
Gotcha. But it was pretty good. I mean, you can kind of like tell that it's from that era based on the like, because the lettering and the coloring is still kind of in that style.
Yeah.
They didn't like, update it or anything. But and it also, so it kind of it makes sense that it's from the era because it reminded me kind of like a 50s B film. Like they would have those drive-in movies, like the about disembodied heads and like weird things like that, weird sci-fi movies. Because this guy Randall, as his last name, he's working with the scientists, and he's got a steel claw as a hand, like as a false hand, and the machine that they're working on blows up, and he realizes that, like, he goes to touch a high voltage cable and electrocutes himself, but nothing happens except for, well, nothing that you would expect to happen happens, but he turns invisible, so the only thing you can see is a claw. So throughout the story, like, he's not a good guy. He robs a bank, and like, he just becomes more and more escalates his crime spree, and every once in a while he has to find a way to electrocute himself, so that he turns invisible again because people can start to see him, and so he uses it to kind of like freak people out, when they see just a floating hand. And but as time goes on, he has to electrocute himself and with like higher and higher voltages to stay invisible for long enough. And he starts to do these bigger events where he hijacks a plane and causes it to almost crash, and he'll leave behind notes to say, this is proof of my power, the steel claw. And he continues to do that. This is all taking place in England because, like I said, it's a British thing. But he ends up taking a plane and to New York as the heat gets kind of heavy on him in England. And it's actually like he goes into a studio as there's a news broadcast, and the news broadcaster is right in the middle of talking about the steel claw, and he comes out from behind, and the claw punches the guy in the back of the head, knocks him out, and he's like, "This is the steel claw. You have heard of me in your newspapers and on the air. Now I have come to America to destroy New York by dawn tomorrow." And apparently, being able to be just an invisible floating steel hand allows him even to like break into a place where he can get the materials to put together a nuclear warhead. So that's how he's threatening the city. But he ends up kind of in a desperate situation where he's trying to find where he starts to become visible again, and he's got things set in motion for the city to be destroyed, but he's visible, so he's having a hard time getting out of the city himself, while the people that were after him in England are arriving to help them hunt him down. And he's like trying to find a way to electrocute himself enough to disappear again. Like, he goes into the subway and grabs a hold of the high voltage rail, and he becomes partially invisible, but not enough. So he's trying to find his way to a power station in time. But at the end of the issue, they turn off the power to the building just as he's about to electrocute himself, so he's trapped there. So it was fun. I mean, it wasn't great, but I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. Like I said, it definitely has like a 50s B movie film to it, feel,
Yeah.
where it's kind of goofy and silly, but entertaining at the same time.
Cool. I own those 4 issues
Okay.
of the Steel Claw. I don't remember it at all, but I obviously read them at some point. My pick is for Marvel Premiere number 3. And another. This one I picked because I went to go see Doctor Strange and I wanted to read a Doctor Strange book I hadn't read before. And this one I do own, but I'm reading it in an Epic Collection. This is a Doctor Strange Epic Collection Volume 3 called A Separate Reality. And this one is plotted and drawn by Barry Windsor Smith with dialogue done by Stan Lee. So Marvel Premiere, I own every issue now except for a few Doctor Who issues, and I'm not in a hurry to get those because I don't, never gotten into the character. But every other issue I own. And this is the first appearance of Doctor Strange before he got his own title. And they launched him, he was in Strange Tales and other books before that. They launched him in this title, and then it became Doctor Strange. And when it becomes Doctor Strange, I really like it. Those books are really good. I haven't read this before. And it was really good. It was in the vein of weirdness that's in the movie and such. He's walking in the rain, and he keeps talking about like he's being watched, and there's a presence of a demonic danger. And he's so engrossed in his thoughts that a car comes up to him and almost hits him, but he's able to use the power of the Eternal Vasanti and stop them. And he stops the bus and then goes into the Sanctum Sanctorum in New York and shuts the door. And he gets in there and he still seems like he's being watched. And he kind of fights. He goes into his astral plane. And he goes to talk to the Ancient One. And the Ancient One is there and he says, what is this evil that I can sense? Where is it? And he kind of just talks in riddles and doesn't tell him anything about the threat that he's gonna find, other than it's coming. And when he tries to go back into his regular form, he realizes that the entity that's taken over his body, so now he's in his astral plane form and the entity's taken over his body and he's fighting himself. But he's able to materialize in his ghost form, he's able to fight himself. But the other body, whoever's in his body, doesn't care, kind of throws himself out the window. But he is able to, as an astral plane, reattach himself to his body and then say, what the hell's going on? And then he sees himself in a tree and he starts talking to himself and you're like, what the hell's going on? And then he like talks to the tree and he's able to see that earlier when the truck came and tried to hit him, it actually did hit him, and that he's at a hospital. And he's really dreaming all this stuff, and Nightmare is there. So Nightmare is the Doctor Strange villain that takes over Nightmares is actually in his head and trying to kill him, but he's trying to kill him for somebody else, and Doctor Strange trying to find out who that someone else is, but Nightmare is not willing to reveal that. So he defeats Nightmare in his dream and he's able to go back to himself. And but he knows that there's some entity that's after him, and I imagine that'll be continued in Marvel Premiere number 4, which is no longer plotted by Barry Smith, but it's written by Archie Goodwin, and Barry Smith is the artist along with Frank Bruner, and Frank Bruner really does a great job with Doctor Strange. So yeah, that's my pick because I wanted to pick a Doctor Strange book, and I'm glad I did. I really saw some cool things in here. Plus, seeing Barry Windsor Smith's art, Doctor Strange is pretty amazing.
Nice. Yeah, it kind of thematically fits in, sort of, too.
Yeah.
Some other stuff we talked about. Well, I just have one more that I'll talk about real quick. It's been a while since I talked about Legion of Superheroes on here. But I've been re reading it on and off here and there. Like, I started with when Superboy left the title, 259. And what's kind of interesting about this issue, I'm talking about issue 282. It was plotted by Roy Thomas with a script by Paul Levitz and art by Jimmy Janes and Bruce Patterson. This is like right before Paul Levitz really takes over and starts his run. And Jerry Conway had actually been writing it for a while. And so Roy Thomas and Paul Levitz together are kind of like finishing off some like Jerry Conway plot lines and stuff, and before Levitz starts to kind of do his own thing. And that's one of the things that's kind of interesting about this issue, is it kind of calls back to where I started reading with 259, because it sort of resolves with that issue. Superboy had left. Not only did it stop being Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes as the title of the book, but Superboy also left. It wasn't a part of the group anymore. Saturn Girl removed his memory, or actually, she made it so that he wouldn't remember how to go to the future anymore, and that was something that Superboy willingly subjected himself to. So this kind of connects to that, because it also connects to a storyline where Ultra Boy had died, apparently, and but then this a little bit after he died, this character appeared, called Reflecto, and they weren't sure of his identity. And then in a battle, Reflecto gets blasted, and underneath his costume, he's wearing Superboy's costume. But he says that he's Ultra Boy. So he looks like Superboy, but he's got Ultra Boy's personality, and like it sort of makes some sense as to why Reflecto had been super connected to Phantom Girl, because Phantom Girl and Ultra Boy had been in a relationship, but she's real. It's real confusing for her because it's Superboy's body, but saying that it's Ultra Boy, so that's kind of a mystery that's outstanding at this point. And when this issue starts, Lightning Lad, Karate Kid, Phantom Girl, and a few others, Wildstar, they're all in the present day, like Superboy's present day. And they got captured because when they came back to try to figure out why Superboy had Ultra Boy's memories. And when they got back, they were immediately arrested because apparently before Superboy left the present day, he had stopped the he had like interrupted a nuclear bomb test just out of the blue for apparently no reason. And so they got to break out of jail in the 20th century to figure out what's going on. And they do, because Phantom Girl, she phases halfway to her own dimension, the big stole, BGAZTL. So she does that. She's able to get everybody out of prison. But it's kind of interesting because they're in the 20th century version of her planet, which she's not real familiar with. And they're only there briefly, but it's kind of neat that they actually took the time to like have them have an encounter there. This strange plane that comes in, these guys in this weird armor, And they realize, you know, we got to get out of here because even though she knows her home planet in the future to be a peaceful place, clearly, like, just like Earth, it has its own history. And there's something that's going on there at that time. So they head back to, well, they're in the process of heading back to Earth, and they actually, and they're in this sort of like limbo, dimensional limbo area, and they find Ultra Boy unconscious, floating in this limbo area. Meanwhile, things in Smallville is kind of neat. You know, Lana Lang, she in the Silver Age and Bronze Age, like she had a history of being an honorary member of the Legion, so she had seen in a previous issue she had seen Legion members in Smallville, so she's trying to figure out what's going on. She goes to where that they're being held, and so she pulls out the ring that she gave them, or she, that they gave her back in Adventure Comics 356 is the note there. And she's Insect Queen is her Legion identity, and she can turn into different kinds of insect women. So she becomes Bee Girl, and uses it to try to break in to find out what's going on. She has some difficulty because she's like, I'm not very good at the superhero business, because she's able to like threaten the guards. They don't want her to sting her, but then being a bee doesn't give her enough power to like rip enough strength to rip open the bars on the windows. So then she switches into like a Black Widow woman and webs them all. But so we finally get like a kind of a crazy explanation for why Superboy had Ultra Boy's memory as the Legionnaires meet him in the limbo area, where he's been stuck there. It's like when in the issue where he had gotten apparently killed, he kind of like shifted out of his body, and it shows that he followed them home, but he was kind of like a ghost character, and so no one could see him even though he was trying to be seen. And he looked at the clock, and it seems like his ultra energy ability had escaped him through from death through time, so he started pushing his way back through time, and he ended up that's how he ended up in Smallville in the 20th century. And he was trying to push through to Clark Kent telepathically. He had like this Legion telepathic plug in his ear, and so he like did this sort of a not attack, but just kind of like pushed mentally into Superboy, and ended up overdoing it and sort of taking over his mind. And so that's how that happened. And once he realized he was in Superboy's body, his memory is all messed up. He didn't really know who he was. That's when he came across the atomic bomb test, and he thought that the bomb could give him the power that he needed, and so he tossed it up into the air, and it went off. It didn't really know what he was doing, and it backfired. But he did end up going into the future, and his mind kept on like flipping in and out of Superboy's body, and so he ended up with some memories of his own, some of Superboy's, and that's how he made up the Reflecto identity. So the explanation kind of continues from there, but it's kind of crazy. And they get out of limbo, meet back up with the other ones that are in 20th century. They talk to Lana Lang briefly, thank her for her help and stuff, and they realize that some of the problems that they've been having with all this stuff is due to the time trapper. So they go back into the 30th century, and they Superboy's back, into in possession of his correct memories, and they it's pretty, I guess, because they didn't have a lot of space left at this point. They it's resolved pretty quickly, like Phantom Girl. So when they get there, Time Trapper goes to fire this ray on them, and Phantom Girl drops through the floor and comes back up underneath the nozzle of the gun and pushes it up, swings it around so it fires on him instead. They're like, well, he's probably not defeated so easily. I'm sure he'll be back, but at least for now, we've gotten rid of him. So I guess to kind of, resolve things and bring it back to status quo a little bit before Paul Levitz really kind of does his thing. Ultra Boy is back as a part of the team, and Superboy is back who he is, he's kind of officially a part of the team again, and this whole period of him like not coming to the future is over with. And the epilogue is kind of a funny little moment where the Legion, they have the Hall of like the Fallen, like Pharaoh Lad is in there and stuff. And so they had an Ultra Boy statue in there, but they changed it so it's Reflecto, so it's like him, but it's not him. So he's like the only Legionnaire that's alive that's enshrined in their Hall of Dead Heroes. And then basically Ultra Boy and Phantom Girl take a leave of absence to have sex a lot. It seems like,
Always
because
liked the Ultra Boy. I like his power bases, how he could only activate one at a time.
it's kind of funny. He says something, I'm trying to find, he says something funny, or Phantom Girl says has a funny response. Because at the end, she says, "See you, team. I think Joe and I are going to go on leave for a few days." It's like, "Well, what if Lightning Lad doesn't grant you leave? He is the team leader, remember? Then tell him we went AWOL, Cosmic Boy, and not to come looking for us." And everybody's laughing. But there's something that he says something about his powers, and Phantom Girl's response really made me laugh, because that. That's where my comment comes from, that they're gonna go have a bunch of sex.
There's a lot of drama in those soap operas of Legion.
Oh yeah, here it is.
Who's dating who? Like,
Yeah,
still
exactly.
I still can't believe Triplicate Girl or Dual Damsel has Bouncing Boy. Like, that's the one
Yeah.
that amazes me. Like, how did he get so lucky? I mean,
Right.
he could have three women at once.
Oh yeah, here it is. So once Ultra Boy's back in action, and Phantom Girl sees this, he uses his Ultra Breath to take out some of the army guys that are attacking. She phase As she's phasing into Saturn Girl's cell to wake her up, she says, "Love that man. I can't wait until he turns that ultra energy on me."
Oh.
But first things first. So
Bounce
that
bound bound.
it wasn't a surprise where how the issue ended with them two going off. And she gives him a look, man, like she's they show him the Reflecto statue, and he's like, "Gee, I mean, it's great, I guess, Tinya, but and then she says, "But not what you had in mind, right, kid? Gotcha." And he goes, "Ope." But she's got that like look on her face, and she's grabbing his chin. That's her, like, "Oh, I think we're gonna leave for a little bit."
Yeah. So, one thing I forgot to mention is in that Marvel Team Up 101, there was that Mike W. Barr story with the Ditko art. And it kind of takes place after this, him trying to rescue his ex-girlfriend Mindy and putting her in an asylum, sort of, to get her thing back, her mind back together and try to help her. And he's like pouting in the second story. So he like goes pouting, and then he launches like these laser blasts at a building that's like vacated, like kind of like half there, like partially demolished. Well, there was a handicapped girl on the other side of the building. So he almost killed her. Like, he collapsed the building on top of her, and then he realized that she couldn't walk. Like, she couldn't get out of there because her crutches and stuff were out. And he tries to hold up the remaining of the building, and he's like, oh crap, the sun is coming up. I'm going to lose my strength. And he's trying to get the girl. He's like, you need to crawl. You need to. I know you can't walk. You need to crawl, or you're going to be crushed. And she eventually gets the courage to pull herself out of there, and the building collapses on him as the sun comes up. But he's shielded because of his wings. But his whole pouting was, am I really a hero? How could I hang out with like Doctor Strange and the Hulk and all these heroes that have powers when I really don't have that much powers? And he just pouted so much that he wasn't concentrating on what he was doing, almost killed a girl. And
Jeez.
then he has that drunk driving incident, so I, holy crap. And then I just wanted to point out, I also bought in 1995. Marvel decided to do something and it didn't pan out, but I wished it would have. They said, we're going to release comics at 99 cents. How about that? Why wouldn't that work? And we're going to take our biggest properties and launch Avengers, we're going to launch Fantastic Four and Untold Tales of Spider-Man by Kurt Busiek. And people will latch onto this because they could only get it for 99 cents. Well, it flopped. Nobody wanted 99 cent comics. But I bought at one of the comic shops in Arizona. They had like a multi-pack, and it had an Avengers Unplugged number 1 through 6. This was one of that 99 cent stuff. The story was by Glenn Herdling and M.C. Wayman. And MC Wayman draws a lot like Mike Diodato in the 90s. So like if you were a vi if you watched his Wonder Woman or any of that style, this guy drew like a lot like it. And there's a character in here I didn't even know existed. In the X-Men lore and other stuff, there's Count Nefaria, and he's kind of a big like energy vampire. Well, there's this character called Nefarious, and they're bringing him to prison, and he actually breaks out of prison. The Avengers are trying to escort him there. They find out he's broken out, and he wants to kill Moonstone. So if you're aware of the Thunderbolts, he wants to kill her. And the whole issue is him going after to try to kill Moonstone, and she eventually gets her powers back and is able to fight him back, and the Avengers help her so she doesn't get killed. And they're able to contain Nefarious, but I found it really interesting. It was a cool story. It's very 90s-ish. Like the artist is like Diodato, a cross between Diodato and Liefeld. But it was interesting. The lineup was Vision, Hercules. I think it was Clint as Giant Man when he had the Giant Man abilities. Oh no, it's Hank. Hank Pym. Clint actually had Giant Man abilities at one point, and the Vision and Black Widow. So it was a cool done in one story. 99 cent attempt. Nobody liked it. The only one that I think took off and lasted a while was Untold Tales of Spider-Man. But I wanted to talk about that, and then we had three questions I wanted to get into before we call it quits. So, let me look these up real quick.
Sure.
I should have bookmarked it. Martin Ferretti says, do you guys have some Doctor Strange retro recommendations before I go see the flick? I've read some of the must-read stuff, but I'm just curious what you guys would recommend.
I honestly haven't read a ton of Doctor Strange stuff. I would like to, but I really don't.
Well, I would recommend, let's see what volume it is. I think it's volume 1. No, it's not volume one. It's volume two. In 1974, they delete Steve Englehart delete, released the series along with Frank Brunner and Gene Colan. I'd recommend like the first dozen or so of Doctor Strange from 1974. I think it's really, really good. That's like my favorite.
I know in the 80s they brought back Strange Tales, and it was him and Cloak and Dagger and like two
Yeah,
separate stories.
I remember that.
I had like an issue or two of that when I was a kid, but I don't remember them, so that's not a helpful answer, but
The other stuff he said he read the obvious, so I think that's important, like to read the Stanley Ditko stuff, because they do a really good job of doing the dark dimension in Ditko style. Like you'll actually see what's on the page
Yeah,
in
that's
on
cool.
the film. So
Nice.
like if you hadn't read the Strange Tales, Doctor Strange stuff with them originally, that highly recommended. They came out with an omnibus on that too, that collects all of it. Yeah, that's pretty much. Oh, and of course, Defenders, the Steve Gerber Defenders. If you like Doctor Strange and you want to read some Nighthawk and those, I love Doctor Strange and Defenders.
That's a
That's
cool. That's a cool
my
one.
first. What do you call it? Exposure to the character was through Defenders. I think Bendis did some good stuff with them too, fairly recently. Very different, but it was pretty good. He had the new Avengers. It was an odd lineup.
Yeah. Jason Aaron is the one that's writing this series now, right? Or was, or
The Avengers or Doc? Oh no, Doctor
no,
Strange.
Doctor Strange,
Yeah,
yeah.
he's writing it now. So what else? Oh, I gotta say bye out to Barb real quick. Drive carefully.
Smoochies.
Yeah, she's going to yoga.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's what Kara did this morning.
Ah, Kara just did yoga. There you go. We talk comics, you go do yoga. You go be healthy, and we'll just sit here and talk about superheroes all day.
Pretty much.
Donnie Salvo, this is a good question, and I'll let you tackle it first because you're really into the Titans lore right now. But he says this is kind of a current retro question in the current Titan series. Okay, so I, based on what I've heard you say, and based on what I've said, I don't think we're big fans of Dan Abnett, and I can't remember who draws it,
Brett Booth.
Brett Booth series. But he's saying in the current series, what classic Teen Titans or Titans would you like to show up in that title?
Well, one thing I do think, sorry.
Well, I just want to say most of them are there in doppelgangers and stuff, but.
I mean, one thing I do think is cool about that series is that I would have never really thought that Lilith and would be back around, and that I think it's really cool that she's a part of the team. I think it's cool that Mel Duncan and Karen Beecher
That was my
are cool.
favorite issue. It's the issue where they bought them back.
Yeah, I think it's cool that they were in that, and you know, I kind of think of Titans Hunt in association with this title, so it's kind of a continuation of that. So, and they were in that. So I think that that's cool. And because I had gone through that first volume of Teen Titans last year, mostly I think it was from Kid to Flash. It's cool to see those characters in the present day. But yeah, that's a lot of them. I mean, kind of be cool to maybe do like Betty Kane. Because there was a version of Betty Kane as Batgirl, but they could maybe bring her as Flamebird. You know, she was in the New
Yeah, Titans
52
West.
and Batwoman, so they could keep the connection to Batwoman, and use that version of the character. But so maybe she doesn't necessarily have a connection to the team, but she could kind of work. And you also have Tula, Aqua Girl, around.
Well, she's in the Aquaman titles. They could use her.
Yeah, so they could kind of, I don't know, she could make an appearance over there or something like that, or they kind of have some connection since Aqua
She has a big role in
is there.
Aquaman. She's like the
Right, yeah.
Ministry of Defense or whatever.
Right. Beyond that, like, I was just kind of looking at some of the
Would say Hawk and Dove. I'd like to see them
teams.
in there.
Yeah, that's kind of the what I didn't mention from the original is Hawk and Dove, and
Oh,
then
you
you
don't. It doesn't have to be original. He said Titans or
no, I
Teen
know,
Titans. Yeah.
yeah, but covering the original.
I like to see Lilith. Like, I think in the first few issues, like maybe it was two or three, they wrote Lilith really well when she was like they're trying to probe Flash's mind. I mean, there were
Right.
aspects of the series that I liked, but as a whole, I don't like it. I don't know. But
Well, a lot of it's the art for me.
well, it's the art for me, but it's also the story. I haven't felt it's gone anywhere.
No, it's too slow. It is too slow moving, yeah. Well, I think it would be interesting to kind of, in terms of like not with the crossover, but just like with the world building of Rebirth, and Christopher Priest is doing such great work on Deathstroke. It'd be cool to explore some of that connection to the
Sure.
Titans in the present day, like with they already have Ravager
Ravager.
back, but then with his other son Jericho having such a strong connection to the Titans in the past, and then they could do something with a with one of the Terras, perhaps at some
I
point.
always liked Argent. She was in that one, Titans by Dan Jurgens that nobody likes.
Yeah, so that's yeah. I was wondering if you had any from that era, because that the era that I'm least familiar with is like the is the '90s
It was
Titan
like
stuff.
yeah, it was Jodo and the guy that got his arm taken off in Final Crisis. I can't remember his name.
Let's see, there was Risk.
Yeah, Risk. Risk got his
Risk.
arm ripped off in that series.
Fringe.
Prism and Argent. Argent was their most popular, like they used her the most out of that run.
Yeah, 'cause didn't she like she kind of showed up in other stuff later.
Yeah. Risk was interesting, but he had a personality very much like Hawk. He was a pretty angry dude. Miss Martian, I really liked in the Teen Titans run, the Sean McKeever run. I
Yeah, I
thought
like
she
that
was
character.
great. And Kid Devil, I really liked him in there as well.
Miss Martian was good on the Young Justice show too.
Yeah, Miss. So I mean, there's a couple that I would like: Kid Devil and Miss Martian. Supergirl was a part, and then Ravager and Blue Beetle.
I would like to have the I would like to have the old Raven back.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making her a little more similar now than she than the New 52, like
She's similar to old Raven, but how could I say it? It's a little young. It's very young. She's in high school now and stuff.
yeah, I mean the Wolfman Perez Raven was like 19 or something like that, and she's probably like maybe like
Sorry.
4 or 5 years younger, but she feels a lot younger. I mean, it's okay. I miss the I miss the history that she has with the other characters.
Yeah, and
They're
you could say the same thing for Cyborg, but there's no way they would take him out of the Justice League because he's so ingrained in it now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's so ingrained, plus they have the movie coming out. And then in this new version, he is a Justice League member. He's never been part of the Titans, so.
Yeah.
We won't see him.
Well, I mean, they could end up restoring that history, and just that he's taken the step up and he's a part of the Justice League now. I mean, I'm anticipating that as time goes on, they're going to restore more history.
Yeah.
That's my guess, at least. Like, but one of the areas that they haven't, whereas like they are restoring some history, like showing connection between like say Green Arrow and Black Canary, there are other areas where that history isn't reconnected, and that's whereas like they while the new Teen Titans series like has a team composition that feels a little bit more like the approach that like they took with the Geoff Johns series, where you have like some of the new Teen Titans on a team with like younger versions of the counterparts, with like Starfire being on the team, but
But she's
like with Geoff.
the right age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Geoff Johns had Tim Drake, Robin instead of Dick Grayson. Now they have like Damian Wayne. So it's like I feel like when they put that team together for the Rebirth Teen Titans, they kind of were looking to put the composition together there a little similarly to the Geoff Johns one.
Yeah, and be younger too.
But
Yeah,
also
really
have,
younger.
yeah.
I mean, the only one
But,
that's out there is Starfire. She's
yeah.
definitely the mentor of the group.
Right. Yeah, because Beast Boy and Raven are on the team, but
But
they're both
Damian will
younger.
never allow that. All
Not
right.
easily, at least.
We have one more question from Carlos Fuentes. He says, "What are the Doctor Strange Defender comics you would recommend?" Oh, so we already answered that sort of.
Oh,
But
yeah, there you go.
as far as Defenders, I'll give you a run of Defenders that's absolutely amazing. And if you want to talk about like a lot of heroes in it, it's got like Yellowjacket and Daredevil and Luke Cage and everybody. I think it's like around the 20s, and it's Steve Gerber. And it's very political. Like they fight a white supremacist group called the Son of the Serpent, which they've appeared
Yeah.
recently. I would read
That's
like
one Marvel series I'd really like to dig into at some point.
I would read it, for Defenders. I'd read. We already talked about Doctor Strange, but for Defenders, I'd read Defenders 22 through 25 and see if you like that stuff. And if you like that stuff, then you will dig the Defenders. But you got Son of Satan in there. I mean, God, it's got such a lineup. It was awesome. It was my favorite Defenders thing ever. I got this off the shelf. It was really good. I still love it. It's like, what if the Defenders had to fight like Hydra, but Hydra is a white supremacist group? And they actually capture all the defenders, so there's all kinds of other characters like Daredevil and Yellowjacket and everybody else that get into the mix to help. Really good stuff. You
Nice.
haven't read many Defenders, right?
No.
And then
No, I'd like to though.
he just said he had a comment. He said, "Would Daryl watch or read Lego Batman if his best friend Tom King wrote it?" I doubt it. If I know
That's a
Daryl, he
tough
sticks
one.
to his guns. But if Tom asked him to, as a friend, to watch it, I think he would. But if Tom didn't
Yeah.
say anything, like Tom said, "Daryl, I want to see how what you thought about my Lego Batman." If it was Lego Batman or Muppet Batman or whatever, Daryl wouldn't give two shits about it. It'd just make him angry.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why that's a retrocast
Yeah.
question, but
Lego Batman's pretty recent.
yeah.
Oh, it was just a comment. I think he's just teasing. We were supposed to record DC Noise, and that was a
Oh, I
DC
know.
Noise question last night.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Picking it up.
Yeah, he's just doing a follow-up.
Yeah.
So that's it. Well, you can reach Chris at MythMakingETC. Is that the website too, MythMakingETC.com?
Yeah, well, that blogspot.com.
Okay, get the Blogspot, and that's where you could get the Comic Booster Club, right?
Yep.
Okay,
Yeah,
so.
we're probably gonna record next Friday, and so hopefully this we're gonna get the recording issues worked out. So
Yeah, get him to record too. That's always good.
yeah,
I
actually, after
usually
he
have you
posts, I was
record. I'm pretty reliable because I never upgrade. I haven't lost anything recently. There was one time I lost something, but Daryl was recording. So the only one that I ever at risk of losing is Geek Brunch because Bill doesn't have any recorder, nor does he put anything on his computer to record it. So that's the only one that I could potentially lose.
Yeah, if this free program works out that I'm testing out, then I think I was just thinking that when I was reading your post that you read the or posted the other day that since it's free anyways, just have him download it
Yeah, I don't know
as
if
a
he
backup.
will. Just for spite, he might just not do it.
Maybe.
Maybe. He's very pretentious, that guy.
Who?
Bill Bulmer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he won't record just because he will only record if he's got his reel-to-reel player working or something. Which is really retro. And then he'll just get me him on that side, but he won't get me.
And that, yeah, and then the only way you'd be able to listen to the show is if you like mail out, you'd have to send him like a self-addressed stamp envelope. He'll send you
Yeah,
a cassette tape with it.
the cassette tape with just his side of the recording, and then I could like have to translate that to digital. It's just not worth
No.
it.
No.
All right, so that's where you could find Comic Book Booster Club and From Kid to Flash. And you could find me at Geek Brunch Podcast or DC Noise Podcast. And I am at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter. And Chris is at MythMakingETC. And emails is at MythMakingETC@gmail.com for Chris and Mike@ComicBookNoise.com for me. And thank you all for listening. Do you have anything else?
Nope. I don't think so.
All right, we had a lot of discussion, a lot of rambling about Universal Monsters and Dracula, but that was fun.
Yeah,
I
fill
like
up.
the ra I like the randomness of it. That's my favorite tangent stuff.
Yeah. Took that we had that in place of Battlestar this time.
Yeah. Makes me hungry to watch some of the universe. I don't think I've ever saw Creature of the Black Lagoon in f from beginning to end either.
Yeah, I don't think
Like, I sure like to check that one out. So
Yeah.
I've watched Frankenstein, Werewolf, Wolfman, and Dracula a lot, but the other ones I hadn't. Ooh, The Invisible Man is one of my favorites.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
I love that movie. And they played it, and I missed it. On the same channel.
You
And
could probably get like a box set of all the Universal horror movies or something like that.
yeah,
You
I
should
should look
check
up
that out.
that on Amazon and just see if I could have it. And then
Yeah.
every Halloween I could revisit it.
Yeah, you could just do a marathon.
Yeah, good idea. I'm gonna go look on Amazon for that.
There you go.
Yeah.
I always try to get you to spend money on something when we record. It's
Yeah, I'm interested in
usually comics,
the
but
Nevada thing that you talked about. That
yeah, me too. I want
because it's Gerber.
to watch
I mean Gerber is, man, he's good. Like I dig Gerber. Like if you want to read Man Thing and Howard the Duck and Defenders is my favorite. I'm least versed in Howard the Duck, but the other ones I've read quite a bit about. Even though Howard the Duck's first appearance is in Man Thing.
Yeah.
It's that weird dimension. I've read a lot of Howard the Duck, but not Steve Gerber Howard the Duck, like current stuff. But I have the omnibus. There's no excuse. I should dig in there.